Today on the Audio Stash, we're presenting Smoke the Vote 2006 election coverage.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming?
Welcome back to the Audio Stash. Today, I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org. Visit our website at normalaudiostash.com to listen in to individual interviews with the campaign directors for marijuana initiatives across the country. You can also hear our special report from last week, featuring audio of SAFER supporters in Colorado versus Colorado Governor Bill Owens. And make sure to subscribe to our podcast and tune in to the Audio Stash tomorrow for extensive election analysis from the Normal headquarters in Washington, D.C. Today on the Audio Stash, we'll be highlighting some of the interviews we've captured during this important election season. We're going to start with Mason Tavert, the campaign director for Safer Alternative for Enjoyable Recreation. We first spoke with Mason on August 14, 2006, as Safer handed in over 100,000 signatures to qualify Amendment 44 for the ballot in Colorado. Mason, thanks for joining us here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash today.
Thanks for having me.
Recently, we heard about 129,000 signatures being submitted for a statewide ballot initiative. Tell us about the initiative and what it seeks to do in Colorado.
Yeah, what this initiative would do is amend state statutes so that possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana by adults 21 and older would be legal. And in essence, what it's doing is allowing adults who are of age to use alcohol legally to make a safer choice to use marijuana instead.
And this is based on your successful municipal campaign up there in Denver that showed, what, 54% of Denver residents came out in support of that?
Yeah, 54% of Denver voters came out and voted in favor of Initiative 100 last year, which made that exact same change, but at the city level. Unfortunately, the city has continued to enforce state law and has more or less ignored the will of the voters, so we are now seeking to change state law so that cities and towns in Colorado can decide for themselves whether it makes sense to punish adults for using less harmful drugs than alcohol.
Now, this is a very innovative initiative, especially as far as a statewide initiative goes, because it's not about medical access, where we've seen in many other states. This is about a regular adult responsible use.
Indeed. Yes, this is not, Colorado is fortunately already a medical marijuana state, and there are nearly 1,000 patients here on the statewide registry. And while we would obviously love to see them gain safer access to their medicine, I personally feel, and many people feel, that the most logical next step is to make marijuana legal for adult recreational use, because clearly if it's available for recreational use, there's absolutely no reason why someone who is in need of it for medical purposes wouldn't be able to get it.
In fact, if this initiative is passed, the 1,000, over 1,000 Colorado patients up there for state medicinal marijuana will be the most protected patients in the country for any state that has medicinal marijuana.
Yeah, and that's what's so great about this. I mean, for so long, our federal government has more or less tricked people into thinking that it's controlling marijuana and marijuana laws. Everyone thinks that somehow if there was no state or local law enforcement, that the federal government would step in, but what it comes down to is the federal government only handles 1% of marijuana cases right now, and 99% are handled by local and state police. And the reason for that is because the federal government just does not have the resources or the time or to go out and handle this. So if this does pass, city and state police in Colorado will not be able to cite under city and state law. And if they do choose to cite under federal law, then there would need to be a federal court, a federal prosecutor, and a federal judge, all simply for an adult over 21 possessing a small amount of marijuana, possibly even like a gram or a joint. It's completely absurd, and we don't really expect to see that happen.
What kind of reaction have you had from the public? What kind of calls are you fielding, both from the public and from the media?
Well, the public has obviously gotten more and more involved in this as they hear about it, and that's really the point of our campaign, is to get the message out there and turn this into a serious issue that could have serious consequences, whether it's for the people or for the state or for other politicians running in local elections. The whole idea is to make this an issue that people care about, because right now, when people go to vote, they generally only vote based on the one or two issues they strongly care about. Now, for your listeners, clearly that might be marijuana, but for the mainstream public, it's abortion, it's immigration, it's tax issues, all these other things. And what we want is to make marijuana and marijuana law the crux of this election season. We want people to know that this is on the ballot and to be asking these public officials what their stance is on it, and we want people to base their votes on that. I mean, it's absurd that there are currently candidates that live in areas that strongly support changing marijuana laws that are completely unwilling to introduce such legislation and so on, and we're hoping to stimulate that, and we're encouraging the press to help us do that by covering this issue and treating it similarly to other issues and not treating it like, you know, it's a crazy drug issue that no one cares about.
Not treating it like it has for the last 35 years of our modern television media.
Exactly.
So, you know, I think it's interesting. You guys have had a lot of success, especially in Denver, and with 129,000 signatures going into the Colorado Secretary of State's office this week, it shows a broad support for this issue. There must be some pushback as well. What kind of opposition pushback have you seen?
Well, currently we have a few different committees that have organized in opposition to us. None of them have been active thus far, although we did get slightly held up in the ballot title process. That's the process through which we go to set the name of the initiative and what would appear on the ballot. We have an opponent named Beverly Kynard. She is an old school drug warrior who many folks might have heard of before. She is known for testifying that industrial hemp will make you high, and so on. She's clearly not altogether. But she runs the Christian Drug Education Center down in Canyon City. It's a little prison town down in Colorado. She has been active. She's started a couple committees. We also have David Evans, who is a very well-known drug warrior, works with the Drug Free Schools Coalition, who is also registered a committee. And then we have the Attorney General and the Governor of the state who have vowed to really focus on this and fight it if it does make it on the ballot. And, you know, while this does seem daunting, it is welcomed as long as these groups are willing to engage in serious discussion and debate, because we would like nothing more than to be able to engage and debate with all of these groups. I mean, there's no doubt that marijuana is less harmful than alcohol. So all we really feel like we need to do is get that message out there. So the more opposition there is, the more we'll get to talk about it, and the more the media will care, and so on.
It sounds like a wonderful opportunity. You guys are creating the discussion up there and allowing some of that sort of age-old mindless propaganda, giving you an opportunity to really counter that with the reasonable sense of real modern science that backs up this position that marijuana is less harmful than alcohol, not just equally harmful, but less harmful.
Indeed, yeah, and it's unfortunate that more people don't know that, whether it's people who have never used marijuana before or people who used it in the past but have since been tricked into thinking it's somehow 20 times more potent or whatever, you know, people need a way to relate to it. And if they've never used marijuana or don't currently use marijuana or have children who might use marijuana, we need to let them know that, hey, you know, they shouldn't be using marijuana if they're, you know, certain people shouldn't be using it. But if they do, it is, say, better than if they might go out and consume a bunch of alcohol, which they are already allowed to do. We shouldn't be prohibiting people from making a rational decision on in favor of better health.
Have the campuses up there been important to this initiative, and have young people been important to this?
Well, yeah, we got our start back in January of 2005 when we organized students at the University of Colorado Boulder and at Colorado State University, and we passed student referendums saying that the penalties for students caught with marijuana should not be greater than for students who are illegally drinking underage, because essentially you're sending the message that it's more acceptable to drink when we see all these serious problems on college campuses with alcohol and not so much with marijuana. So we do have a broad base of support at those two schools where we've already organized students. There's another couple very large schools, the University of Northern Colorado up in Greeley, Mesa State out in Grand Junction, a couple of smaller private schools, and we really do plan on having a lot of organizing going on at those places, getting a lot of students involved, getting a lot of new students registered to vote, because we very well could bring out about 50,000, 60,000 new voters just based solely on the new college students in the state.
And that's interesting in and of itself, Mason. I think it's interesting that, you know, when you talk about making marijuana one of the top issues, especially when we talk about things like immigration and Social Security, things that really haven't moved forward in America for 30 years, we could really move forward very quickly on marijuana law reform, as demonstrated by you guys in Denver. But when we bring up this debate, how much education do people, you know, and bringing new voters in, how much education do we have to do for each person to understand the real reasoning behind marijuana equalization right now?
Well, for many people, we don't really need to educate them at all. There's a number of people out there, I'm sure many of your listeners, who already know that marijuana should be legal, and they know it's less harmful than alcohol, and they know the sky's not going to fall if we change our laws. But, you know, so those are the people who we work on with our message, just to get them to understand that, hey, if you are going to be voting, you should know the facts about this drug. You should know all this stuff before you go and vote whether it should be legal or not. But more so importantly with the colleges, it's just to get them to know that they have the opportunity. And that's really what we'll be focusing on in large part, is getting media attention, making this a big statewide issue, something that gets brought up in conversations, whether it's in classrooms or at lunch, you know, or at parties on weekends. We want people talking about this, talking about the opportunity to vote on this, and hopefully if everyone knows that they have the chance to simply go to a polling place and spend 5 minutes and vote to make marijuana legal, we'll get a lot of people out there voting that never have before.
And young people really do need issues. I mean, in study after study, the reason that young people aren't voting is because they don't feel connected to the issues that the candidates are talking about. And here you're not talking about a candidate. You're giving an issue right on the ballot. What the best way to be a citizen activist and exercise your right to vote.
Exactly. And that's all we're asking that people out here in Colorado do. And we're confident that if we get our message out there, and whether they've heard it before or not, if people hear that marijuana is less harmful than alcohol and they show up to vote, we think that we should do fine.
Mason Tvert is spokesman for Safer Alternative for Enjoyable Recreation in Denver, Colorado. Mason, thanks for joining us here today.
Thank you, Chris.
Next in our continuing coverage of the California deprioritization ordinances, we'll travel north along the coast and speak next with Laura Castle, campaign coordinator for Measure P in Santa Barbara, California. Laura, welcome to Normal's Daily Audio Stash today.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Great to speak with you today, Laura. On your website, sensiblesantabarbara.org, I'm seeing this polling data showing overwhelming support for marijuana reform in that community. You know, what makes Santa Barbara unique that it offers such broad-based support?
Well, I think that Santa Barbara has somewhat of a history of being a progressive city. I think that people realize that arresting and prosecuting otherwise law-abiding citizens just really isn't in line with their goals and values for the city. There's been a lot of cutbacks for the police department here, and subsequently the serious and violent crime rates in the city have swelled. And so people are seeing that they'd rather their police force and their taxpayer dollars be used to focus on the serious and violent crimes.
And Measure P there in Santa Barbara also has the support of Doss Williams, a local city councilor, and a number of groups, including the California Nurses Association.
Yeah, we were actually very happy to get that endorsement, obviously. And the California Nurses Association actually did apply all three measures in California, which is fabulous. So they're supporting Santa Cruz and Santa Monica as well. And we also actually have the support of both local papers now, both the Santa Barbara Independent and the Santa Barbara News Press.
And Laura, all of these initiatives require a signature-gathering petition process to get them on the ballot in California. What was that process like for Measure P?
My experience, you know, I was very active in gathering the signatures to actually get on the ballot. And, you know, when you stand out in the streets, you know, all day talking to people saying, hey, you want to sign this petition, you really kind of get a feel for what the population wants, which is why I was so happy to be working on Measure P, because 4 out of 5 times when you stop someone, all they'd say is, wow, this is great, where do I sign? So that was a really good sign that the community wanted Measure P.
And what do the supporters of Measure P in Santa Barbara hope will be the effect if this is passed?
The supporters are just hoping that the police force will focus their time and resources on serious and violent crimes. Some statistics that were actually provided by the Police Officers Association themselves. In the past 4 years, attempted rape has increased 66%. Child abuse has increased 57%. Home burglaries have increased an astounding 109%. And simultaneously, we have statistics from the California Department of Justice saying that very few of these reported crimes are actually even solved. So, for instance, only 17 out of 76 robberies were solved, only 6 out of 31 forcible rapes were solved, and that's only in the past year. And the end cost to the community is in the millions. I mean, it's $3.6 million in 2005 alone from crimes costing Santa Barbarans. So the community is hoping that the police force, like I said, will utilize their resources and work to combat these serious crimes that are going on in their community that truly affect the quality of life.
And finally, how about that college community there in Santa Barbara? Have they been part of this support?
Well, actually, it's interesting because we do have a lot of college students who are active on the campaign. For instance, the chair of Sensible Santa Barbara, a gentleman by the name of Ethan Kravitz, he is a senior at UCSB, and he kind of started out the whole campaign. But interestingly enough, the university is not on the property of the city of Santa Barbara. So all those students aren't even involved in voting on the measure, which, you know, truly shows also, I mean, in a way it helps us because it shows this isn't a measure that's just being voted on by college kids. You know, it's broad segments of the population. It's mothers, fathers, lawyers, doctors, everybody.
Laura, thanks again for joining us here today on the Audio Stash.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. Please, and vote yes on Measure P.
Laura Castle is the campaign coordinator for Measure P, a marijuana deprioritization ordinance in Santa Barbara, California. You can find out more at sensiblesantabarbara.org. It's important to recognize that many elected officials and current law enforcement personnel have voiced their public support and given their endorsements for marijuana law reform. In Colorado, the sheriffs of Pitkin and San Miguel counties are supporting Amendment 44. In Eureka Springs, Arkansas, the mayor stood up in support of the deprioritization ordinance there last week. And in Santa Barbara, California, a local city councilor, Doss Williams, has shown public support and an official endorsement for Measure P, a municipal ordinance that would make marijuana law enforcement's lowest priority. Joining us today from Santa Barbara is Councilor Doss Williams. Councilor, welcome to Normal's Daily Audio Stash today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Great to speak with you today, Councilor Williams, and thanks again for joining us. First, why are you endorsing Measure P in Santa Barbara?
Well, because I think there's some crime problems that are much more pressing than the need to punish people for their own recreational use of marijuana.
And how many marijuana smokers are being arrested each year in Santa Barbara?
Well, you know, it's not a large departure from current practice. I think our police department is already de facto deprioritizing marijuana arrests because they're sensitive to this fact. But I still think there's a value to ratifying that in law and making a clear signal to the rest of the community of what those priorities are for a variety of reasons. One of those is simply to destigmatize that. I think that, again, we could name at least 50 problems that are more pressing in the world than to reform people of marijuana use.
Do you hope other cities might look to Santa Barbara for an example in this regard?
Yes. Our tax dollars are a limited quantity. Our resources as a society have limits. We should be concentrating on the real evils of society instead of recreational marijuana use.
Doss, you're a younger city councilor, yet what's interesting in speaking to Californians is that there's this cross-generational support for these types of marijuana initiatives.
I'm sure actually the baby boomers would be even more probably even more supportive of this than most people my age.
And how have the overall Santa Barbara City Council and law enforcement there reacted to Measure P?
Well, I think everybody is on board that either in fact or officially that there should be a deprioritization. I think there is some disagreement about whether that should be something that we talk about or something that we don't talk about. I think that the only reason why you don't have support for Measure P with the whole council is the thought of a little bit of a fear that either dealers will not be dealt with by law enforcement. But I would remind them and remind the public at large that these measures usually have a provision, and Santa Barbara's measure definitely has a provision, where the police officers still have the ability to use their discretion as to what could be possession with intent to sell. And so I think that's still allows for the discretion and the tough calls to be made by our police officers, but still makes it very clear that it's not the will of the people for law enforcement to prioritize marijuana possession.
And Counselor Williams, in your own career and daily life there in California, has encountering medical marijuana patients led you to make the choice here, or is Measure P so cut and dry that it's an easy choice for you?
It's an easy choice, but the element that compassion plays in this, I think, is huge. We're in the midst of a constitutional conflict between the federal government, the state government, and that's the reason why you're seeing these Measure Ps. I think under ideal circumstances, this would be something that we handled at a state level, and I think that's also why sometimes you see some reluctance from local elected officials. But we've seen with Proposition 215 that the federal government is not necessarily willing to respect the will of the people in these state initiatives in regards to medicinal marijuana, and so that it is necessary for local governments as the agents of closest to the people to help in this, what is fundamentally a sort of a crisis of what are the powers that have traditionally been at a state level that the federal government is not is trying to take away because they don't like permissive medicinal marijuana laws.
And in talking about this constitutional state versus federal power struggle, do you think that marijuana starts to fall into the realm of being a civil right?
Well, I definitely believe that health care is a human right. That right to medical treatment is a human right. And I don't want to, disrespect the term by maybe mixing it with a couple other things, but it is clear to me that when someone is in pain, dying of a debilitating disease, or even possibly gaining strength by the ability to eat that can come from using medicinal marijuana, in cases when someone is going through chemo and needs to keep on the weight or something like that, that this could be something that is life-saving or at very least eases the pains of death. And so to me, that's something that all Americans can agree on, and I think most Americans do if you go out to the public. I think the problem is not all politicians are willing to follow the people yet on this issue.
And Councilor Williams, do you think that it's easier for local elected officials like yourself to deal with these issues than those involved in larger political landscapes, even state legislators?
It may be simply because they're constantly around their constituents. Most state and federal elected officials are, in Sacramento or Washington throughout the week, and they don't necessarily have the ability to talk with their constituents all the time. So in that sense, it might be easier for us. In the sense of the clear delineation of powers, it's not easier for local elected officials. It should be, these are fundamentally issues that should be solved at a state level and be state powers. But the federal government has chosen to try to defy that and enforce drug enforcement laws even on legitimate medicinal users. And so in the wake of that, it becomes really complicated. Do you believe the feds? Do you believe your state elected officials and state law? Well, local governments are officially an arm of state law, and so the law tells us we should be going along with the state. And I think even more important than that, when you're being conflicted between what a state government is telling you and what a federal government telling you should be doing, what your conscience tells you to do. And for me, that is to support medicinal marijuana laws and to look that and ensure that the laws that are on the books are not used to thwart the will of the people in regards to those laws.
City Councilor Das Williams of Santa Barbara, California, thanks again for joining us here today on Normal's Daily Audio Staff.
Thank you so much for having me.
Measure P in Santa Barbara goes before voters Tuesday, and more information can be found at sensiblesantabarbara.org. Finally, today we'll hear from Citizens for Responsible Crime Policy in Missoula, Montana, where a local deprioritization ordinance is up for a vote today. Montanans have the unique opportunity to register and vote right on Election Day. We're going to check in with Angela Goodhope, the campaign coordinator for Initiative 2 in Missoula, Montana, a marijuana deprioritization initiative sponsored by Citizens for Responsible Crime Policy. Angela, welcome back to Normal's Daily Audio Stash today.
Well, thanks for having me, Chris. It's good to be back.
Thanks again for joining us. And Montana voters have something uniquely available to them, same-day voting, which, unlike most of the country, has a 30-day pre-registration deadline. Voters can participate fully in an election right on Election Day.
Yep, they can go to the second floor of the county courthouse up until, I believe, it's noon, and register to vote and vote what you would call absentee right there and then.
Angela, what kind of feedback are you getting on Initiative 2 there in Missoula?
We've had quite a few people send back our endorsement letters with donations, which is really a wonderful thing to get in the mailbox. We've had a really good coming out from people in the university crowd as far as picking up the yard signs and getting them displayed around town. We've had a few letters to the editors published, which that's been good too. So just, you know, a lot of support and conversations.
Angela, I know you've had to deal with some of the same desperate rhetoric from the opposition, mainly local law enforcement, as we've seen in Colorado and in other places.
Well, I hate to use the term reefer madness, but it's similar to that. I actually went to a meeting this morning, and it was just mind-blowing, the fabrications that are coming out of their mouths as far as they'll lose federal funding. And excuse me, one officer was saying that they would face civil lawsuits because they weren't following the law. And I did remind everybody in the meeting that it's a recommendation. It's not mandatory. It's up to the law enforcement community to honor the will of the people, but there's nothing in there that says you have to do this. And I explained to him from a paralegal standpoint, which is what I have some training in, is that an attorney or a judge would need some kind of law to actually reference before they would go after a law enforcement officer as far as a civil suit. And there's just no change to the codes or the statutes. It doesn't change the law at all.
And have these reefer madness statements been surprising? I know I was shocked to see what happened in Denver last week.
Well, you know, in my world, I figured that the truth would be known. And it's, you know, it's a little shocking initially when you hear something totally fanatical and just off the wall as far as an interpretation of this initiative. But then again, in retrospect, I think it's always been that way. And I believe a lot of those folks are living their fears, and they're not really rationally approaching it. And they feel rather threatened by the idea of a community oversight committee. There's been a lot of adverse press as far as coming from the county attorney on that one, which is a little frustrating because it's just a way for the people and the law enforcement to work together in a more closer relationship, which I believe in any case is probably a good thing.
It certainly sounds like it will have a positive impact. Tell us about the language of Initiative 2 and remind us how this oversight committee will be put into practice.
According to the initiative, it would be the county commissioners that would appoint the oversight committee. Our intention was, and I already have a list of individuals very interested in participating in it, we would submit a recommendation or just, you know, here's the list of people that wanted to do this. And then 7 months' time from November 7th, if and when it passes, they would be producing their first report, which, as near as I can tell from the initiative, would be easy to implement an additional question or two on the intake form when you are arresting or charging someone with a marijuana-related crime. And then that form would obviously be redacted as far as the personal information that would go to the committee, and then the committee on a quarterly basis or more as needed would tally and track of funding and or spending on the marijuana charges, and also like demographics as to who was arrested, where they were arrested, and also the committee will hear grievances from individuals who feel they were kind of wrongly pursued. But again, there's no change to the law, So there's really not a lot of steps other than the committee can go back to the county and or report to the citizenry on what's happening and what's going on.
Well, with Initiative 2 not actually changing the law, it sounds like some folks are really afraid of further scrutiny and oversight of law enforcement activities. It does beg the question, what's the relationship like between law enforcement and Missoula residents overall right now?
It's kind of polarized, I believe. You've got a huge sect of Missoula community that obviously would be pro this initiative for good reason, and they might feel, like I've talked to some people in that type of community, and they feel like it would bring everyone closer together and create more of a sound dialogue between people and maybe undermine some of the fear factor that goes along with someone whose culture involves marijuana. And then you have another side of the spectrum, which I think is where a lot of our opponents are coming from, because there's a lot of people in like drug abuse prevention for children, too, in the high schools that are very afraid that it will increase availability to teens. And they work right hand-in-hand with law enforcement, so then you have both sides of the spectrum. And I've made it clear at the meeting also that in Seattle there was a study done by the University of Washington shortly after, well, I think a year or two after that Initiative 75 went through, and they actually saw a decline in teen use, marijuana use. And also in Prop 215 there was a decline in teen use as well. So it's really difficult to try to battle somebody's thoughts when their thoughts aren't truthful or have no basis. It's just been kind of an uphill battle, because how do you combat something that's completely false? And when you ask them to back it up, they just kind of look at you like, well, I don't know what to say.
Well, Angela, it really sounds like Missoula, like other marijuana reform initiatives, are having broader political impact, putting into place reasons for law enforcement to be more responsible and responsive to their communities.
Right, and the sheriffs, I don't know if they're traditionalists or they're just afraid of more citizens being involved, but they're actually the ones that have funded this opposition as well.
And so these marijuana reform initiatives, they really are pro-law enforcement. Decriminalizing and deprioritizing marijuana is really a pro-cop position.
Well, you know, another story about my meeting this morning, the police officer said, you know, on behalf of the officers in Missoula County, I believe that marijuana is a low priority. And he looked at me and I said, well, then why would you go against this initiative? It endorses and advocates that viewpoint already. You know, it allows you to follow through with what you're saying.
And we've heard this from Santa Cruz and Colorado law enforcement as well, this notion that there's no need for regulations or change in law because law enforcement is somehow de facto making the decision already not to enforce marijuana laws. But we know that that is just not true. We can see very clearly from arrest data that in Missoula, Santa Cruz, and across Colorado and the country, pot smokers are being arrested at a tremendous cost to the state and community.
Yeah, it's up to their discrimination on how they want to spend their day. One statistic I don't think we had come out last time I spoke with you is the fact that if you look at the marijuana arrest rate per capita in Missoula County, we arrest two times as many people as the national average. So then you ask yourself the question, well, is that because more people in Missoula are imbibing or partaking or smoking or what have you? And so we looked at that, and actually Missoula County mirrors the national average as far as people who smoke pot. So we really do need this to go through, and hopefully it'll make a huge difference and make Missoula safer for everybody. Right now we've got, what, 5-6 days to the election, so we just need to keep our nose to the grindstone, be positive, and have a lot of faith and hope that things will work out as they're supposed to.
Angela, I want to thank you again for joining us here today, and I very much look forward to speaking with you next Wednesday.
Sounds good. Thank you, Chris, and have a good day.
Angela Goodhope is the campaign coordinator for Citizens for Responsible Crime Policy in Missoula, Montana, where voters can participate in Initiative 2 with no pre-registration next Tuesday. More information can be found with links at normalaudiostash.com. Joining us today from Las Vegas, Nevada, is the campaign director for the Committee to Regulate and Control Marijuana, Neil Levine. Nevada voters have the chance to approve Question 7 as a ballot initiative on November 7th. This initiative is perhaps the broadest-reaching reform proposed in the country this year and could make Nevada the first state in the U.S. to adopt regulations that encompass all aspects of growing, selling, and possessing cannabis for recreational use. More information can be found at regulatemarijuana.org. Neil, welcome to Normal's Daily Audio Stash today.
Thank you.
Thanks again for joining us. First, tell us what Question 7 proposes to change in Nevada.
In sum, what we're proposing is pulling the possession and sale of small amounts of marijuana to adults out of the criminal market and put into a tightly regulated, controlled, and tax market where we can institute some sensible safeguards and we can generate some revenue instead of money from the sale of marijuana going to violent gangs and drug dealers.
Neil, is there something unique about the state of Nevada that makes taxation and regulation a viable proposal there?
I think Nevadans are a pragmatic people, and there's a bit of a libertarian streak. So there is a bit of live and let live attitude in this state, which is why we think that we've got a really good shot to pass this in less than 2 weeks now. We have 86,000 Nevadans who signed a petition in 5 weeks to put this on the ballot, and we think we're doing pretty well.
And while many think of Las Vegas only or perhaps Reno in Nevada, there are hundreds of very small and rural communities throughout the state. How have those rural residents responded to Question 7?
Well, we've seen a lot. Just last week, the deputy drug czar, Scott Burns, came here for a talk at a community center in rural Nevada, and there were about 30 people in the audience, and we had 12 volunteers show up to protest outside, and the audience was pretty hostile. He didn't get a very warm reception, and they were saying things like, why are we spending all this money enforcing this instead of using money for things that we need? And I'm pretty sure they thought they were going to walk into a pretty friendly audience, and they didn't. And even in rural Nevada, our opponents are meeting up with a lot of people who agree with what we're saying. That's the best and most recent example I could give.
And let's talk about Las Vegas for a moment. How have the city residents there responded to the idea of the taxation and regulation of marijuana?
Well, our internal polling pretty much has us at 50-50, and it has for a while. And that is pretty much spread throughout the state. So we're getting a lot of positive reaction on the doors. We're getting a lot of people coming into the office and volunteering. We're based down here in Las Vegas. And it's been pretty positive.
And Neil, if and when Question 7 is approved by voters next week, who will be in charge of making this system work in the state?
How it would work is it would become the law of the land on November 28th, 3 weeks after Election Day. And then the state would have about 6 months to set up the regulatory system. And so how the taxation would work is it would the initiative charges the Department of Taxation to set up a regulatory scheme. So if you wanted to get a license to manufacture marijuana, you would apply to the Department of Taxation for a license. It's $1,000. And then you would have to sell your marijuana to the retail establishments. There's a tax of $45 per ounce between the manufacturer and the retail establishment, and then there'd be a sales tax at the retail establishment. And the retail establishments would also be licensed by the state, just like any retail establishment is.
Now, there are some controversial tax stamps, as they're called in a few states, that can be put on marijuana, but they're not at all a true tax and regulate system for cannabis.
The tax stamp programs in a lot of places are essentially ways to add more of a penalty onto drug dealers, as I'm sure you know. It's not really a system of taxation. So this doesn't really compare to that at all. What we're talking about is pulling the sale of small amounts of marijuana to adults out of the criminal market and putting it into a tightly regulated and taxed and free market.
And Question 7 is about the adult use of marijuana and puts into place a hard age limit, much like Amendment 44 in Colorado.
You have to be over the age of 21 with a valid ID to even enter an establishment that sells marijuana, much less buy it. These establishments also cannot sell alcohol. They cannot permit gaming. They cannot be located in a gas station or a nightclub or a grocery store. So we're not talking about putting marijuana into the 7-Elevens. It's sort of a tightly regulated system is what we're proposing.
And Neil, what do you hope the overall impact of Question 7 will be if it's passed?
What I want to see is that Question 7 passes and we stop financing the activities of violent gangs and drug dealers and we stop criminalizing the behavior of otherwise law-abiding adults who choose to unwind at the end of the day by using marijuana instead of drinking a beer. That's what I hope to achieve by passing question 7. I don't even smoke marijuana, to be honest with you. The reason that I'm doing this is because we have a really bad policy, and we're trying to replace it with a sound policy.
How much is Nevada spending right now to arrest and prosecute peaceful marijuana smokers?
According to Jeffrey Myron, the cost of prohibition in Nevada is running around $42 million a year. And according to a UNLV study from a few years ago, our initiative would generate at least $28 million in tax revenue. So that's a pretty significant shift. And also, the tax that is generated by marijuana sales in Nevada, 50% would be dedicated to voluntary drug education and treatment, and 50% would go to the general fund.
So $10 million a year going to the state to do with it what it chooses, and 50% of that tax revenue going towards the treatment of drugs that really are harmful to society. Where does the state get its drug treatment money now?
Well, a lot of those programs are funded right now through the state, and there is roughly a 30-day wait to get into treatment. And another problem with how we currently deal with treatment in this state and this country is that you have a lot of people who get court-mandated for marijuana offenses to mandatory treatment. So this initiative helps in twofold. One, it puts way more money into education and treatment. And two, it also frees up slots for nonviolent marijuana offenders who are choosing to go to treatment instead of going to jail, whereas these people would now not be being arrested. You know, almost 5,000 people were arrested for marijuana possession in the state of Nevada in 2005. And so those people, they're not getting arrested, they're not getting fined, they're not going into the system. And those treatment slots are reserved for the people who really need them, plus we're putting a lot more money than they're putting towards it now.
And Neil, what endorsements has Question 7 received from groups in the state?
Well, we received the endorsement from a statewide coalition of religious leaders. And, you know, there is a statewide coalition of a bunch of doctors and nurses and professors and professionals who have signed on to the initiative. So, you know, when you're looking at law enforcement, they have a stake in this fight. And there's some political reasons why they're opposed to us, and why the vast majority of them, you know, even if somebody is in favor, they aren't coming out and publicly saying that they're in favor. Even though we've heard a lot of people saying, "Hey, I'm a police officer and I support this," they would never ever say that publicly, because the entire operational structure of their department is opposed to us. You know, the powers that be. So, but when you put it out into the general community, and people are free to speak their minds, we are seeing a lot of widespread support for this initiative.
And finally, Neil, there are a number of large universities there in Las Vegas, especially. How much campus support has Question 7 received?
We have campus chapters at UNLV, at UNR, and at some of the community colleges. And we are out there pushing our people to vote with everyone that we have. So a lot of the support that we've gotten, we've gotten a lot of support on campus. I was actually debating our opponents at UNLV last week, and the crowd was overwhelmingly in favor of us. I almost felt a little bad for our opponents, to be honest with you. But yeah, it's going well.
Neil Levine is the campaign director for Question 7 in Nevada. Thanks again for joining us here today on Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you. And people listening to this, they can check out our website at regulatemarijuana.org.
Nevada voters can vote early all this week, and we have links to the committee to regulate and control marijuana at normalaudiostash.com. Visit our website at normalaudiostash.com to listen in to all of our interviews and audio regarding today's marijuana initiatives. And tune in to the Audio Stash tomorrow for extensive election analysis from the Normal headquarters in Washington, D.C.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. More than 500,000 Americans are arrested each year for smoking pot. These are ordinary citizens like you and me whose lives and careers are being needlessly destroyed. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.